people are putting technologies in place, but they're not actually checking to see, you know, if they're actually, you know, working to actually stop the breaches. So there's a couple things that I think need to be concluded from that. And first is you need to have some continuous monitoring of all your systems to understand, you know, who's going in, who's using specific files or entering specific databases.
And stop for a moment, because I know you. We talked a little bit before we started. Continuous monitoring is one of these topics that is very in vogue in cybersecurity spaces right now. I'm not sure people fully understand what that means. It essentially means you got to have almost situational awareness. You have to know what's going on in your network almost at all times.
That's correct. It's like, you know, having a security camera on your network. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
And that's important because, I mean, I know the FISMA requirements, which are a little bit in limbo right now as they're talking about potentially modernizing those a little bit. But the FISMA requirement, essentially, it's an annual audit. And once you pass that annual audit, then you're fine in terms of FISMA. But in terms of real-world cybersecurity, it's that continuous monitoring. It's knowing what's going on right now. That's what really matters, isn't it?
That's correct. And I should also add that, you know, continuous monitoring should go well beyond the network. It has to go into your databases, the file systems, and applications, because those are all the different things that move or transact data or financial information.
And your survey found that most people still using the sort of traditional, they have spam filters, they have probably intrusion detection kinds of systems. They're using those traditional tools, and they haven't much branched beyond those, have they?
That's exactly right. And we actually identified in the survey the top five most effective data security technologies. And what I thought was kind of interesting is that the only government mandate that actually has any of those technologies on the required list is the DISA stake. So a lot of other ones are really, really missing some key things to bring down the number of data breaches.
Hmm. We were talking before about the FISMA is the government requirement, but there's a private sector version that you say is in some ways more effective at actually helping organizations secure their systems. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, in the private sector, there is a private regulation that was imposed by the credit card industry upon themselves. It's called PCI, or payment card industry, and the standards are very, very specific. So there's two parts to it. One is a checklist of things that you have to do, and they get quite specific about technologies and products you should be using as a part of an effort to protect credit cards. And then the second part is a penalty. Most mandates today just have a penalty. So they say, you know, if you suffer a data breach, you get spanked or pay some amount of money. And I think the PCI standard was very effective. People, you know, might argue about some of the requirements that it imposes, but it gives everybody a clear list of things that they need to work on. And because of that, and because it's also updated every year or so, it's been adopted quite widely. And in general, you know, we see that, and it's been shown in many surveys and by many companies that the number of breaches for the companies that are taking PCI seriously, they've actually gone down. And I might also add that the security budgets are actually quite higher with companies that are trying to do PCI. So you get better, more efficient, and a little bit richer security in today's pretty nasty cyber environment.
Yeah, and it's more effective because?
Because it's specific. Hmm. It spells out very specifically, here's what you need to be doing. Hmm. And I think that's one of the key items that's missing from most of the dialogue around cyber legislation today.
And as I was reading the report, it's that specificity that it's almost lacking right now. And so we end up almost with my takeaway from your report is we're throwing a lot of stuff up on the wall in the hopes that we're getting some return on all this investment. And if I'm reading between the lines, it's almost like we need to be smarter about how we do this.
That's exactly right. And so if you were to take the PCI model, you've got a group of security experts who put that list together, and then they adjust it based on input, And so it's an evolving document. It's never perfect, but it's certainly better than nothing.
Hmm. The survey was mostly private sector folks, right? Not public sector.
That's correct. But private sector, public sector was included.
Right.
But it was mostly private.
And there's a lot of crossovers. But so when I say this, it says 88% of the participants said they had at least one regulatory or contractual compliance requirement, many having to comply with many regulations. That's true for certainly federal agencies as well. But despite that, to improve security, the most cited primary driver is deploying data security controls, followed by direct compliance with requirements and audit deficiencies. Explain, it almost seems a little bit like a disconnect.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people have been forced to do security for reasons of compliance, and what you're starting to see is what a lawyer would call administrative normalcy.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they've been doing the compliance thing for so long that they've been, you like, tricked into security. and it's an interesting phenomenon. And, you know, you saw the same thing, for example, in the private sector with SOX. So, you know, you had a little bit of thrash for a couple of years because SOX wasn't very specific. But once people kind of figured out what's the right way to go about complying with SOX, then, you know, even the Harvard Business Review published articles saying, hey, some people have actually turned this into a competitive advantage. And are much better about reporting and conducting their finances, and they're much more efficient about it. So that's what I think you're starting to see in many companies.
In a way, almost all the compliance issues have actually worked in terms of making the business case for security. If nothing else, we have to do this because we have to meet these compliance and contractual requirements.
That's correct, yes. It's forcing people to think about it. And when you get lawyers on your side, it's a real big help at a boardroom. So, you know, all of a sudden, security goes beyond, you know, the IT organization, and it's suddenly something that a lawyer or CFO has to contend with. And in some cases, actually, and this is quite common in the financial sector where, you know, hacking is very prevalent, some security teams report directly to the board of directors because of, for example, FFIEC requirements. So yes, that's exactly right.
Was there something, as you started calling through the data that you got from this report, something that surprised you a little bit, something that you didn't expect to find in there?
Yeah, there was a little bit of a disconnect between what people perceived to be effective data security controls and then what actually was effective in terms of improving their data security. So some people felt that, technologies, you know, A, B, and C were most effective, but in fact, you know, it may have been technologies X, Y, and Z. And I think what that tells you is that people aren't assessing the success of their data security controls as effectively as they could. So you have to buy something and say, you know, we want it to reduce the number of breaches. And then over time, you measure against that and keep that as your consistent benchmark. So it tells me that a lot of security folks may not be putting those benchmarks in place, or they are not consistent, and hence a disconnect between what they think is effective and what actually was effective.